Mr. Gormley, reel 32. You pulled out of Tobruk, got away from Tobruk, and obviously heading west towards Alamein, presumably, time.
Well,
what happened to you after leaving Tobruk?
Well, we come out of Tobruk, and there was a big canteen depot, about 15 miles this side of Tobruk. Maybe 15 to 20 miles. I can't remember. Just had a duck near here, or I can't remember the name. But it was a big canteen depot. And I pulled in there. Now, I never stopped that money. God honest to you, I never stopped that bloody money. I might have slowed down a bit here and there, like a bad career and that, but I never stopped that bloody money. When I pulled up, because I had to tell lads living in the front, like, you know, because you just have to go on the back. When I pulled up at this bloody camping place, there was 14 British camera angles on the back. Where the hell did that, I'm a lieutenant, where the hell did they come from after? I couldn't even remember slowing down, you know. And there's maybe 14 bloody cameras on the back of us. I bloody hell, when we pulled into this restaurant, I said, here, we'll be able to get a drink. So we get up like in this bloody left hand wound of Scotchfell, I like it. We're going out there, hey. I said, I'm bloody good and all like it. Oh, thanks to you. Right, he says. So we all went in, they sent the bloke to the big canteen, the canteen boy was there, like, you know, you want to get your bloody skates on, mate, he's captured to Brook Mill. There's no way he's going to fail, he's captured it. He said, you want to get your skates on and get out of here. You want to get out of here while you've got the bloody, while they're going scores. God, is it true? Oh, I said, it's bloody true. He said, we'll just come out of there. And he said, well, help your bloody selves. And all, he grabbed all the bloody cash. He grabbed all the cash and he was in his bloody car and he was away.
So what did you load up with? What did you grab?
We loaded up with everything we could get in that bloody car. Spirits, whiskey, cheese. Nobody could have wanted more than we had. And we got there, and I was coming, the last thing I picked up, and that was the last thing I picked up, I said, well, that would come in bloody handy, was a bloody 2,000 pack of Nassau razor blades. Razor blades and all bloody things. That was the last thing I picked up. I was giving bloody razor blades away to everybody, like, most bloody, you know. I had this 2,000 pack of bloody razor blades boxed about that big.
And then did you move off again, obviously?
And then we moved out and we pulled in, and of course we met others on the way back. And by the time we got to Sloan, we had quite a good gathering of Cameron Hines and that, you know, they all pulled in together there. We were coming in back.
And you weren't attacked at all on this?
Oh, no, we're more or less completely safe there, or worse, reasonably safe. And then the New Zealanders had a bit of a do out on the right-hand side, and we were told, like, you know, we were more or less kept together, and by that time we'd gathered quite a number of the Camerons. So, and then from there we made our way back and back and back, and all the time you're fighting all the time. From there on, fighting all.
And you were engaged, were you?
Oh yes, we were engaged. The New Zealanders were alongside us, and we were all, you know, we were just every man for his bloody self, you know, that's all we could do. And eventually we got back to Alamein.
Did you get involved at Mersa Matruh, which was another defensive or attempted defensive position? But you weren't at this time fighting as a division, or what remained of a division.
We're just fighting alone, so yes. everybody was fighting the odds and frauds, that's all it was. You know, it's what you call odds and frauds. Everybody that come in, and fight, no matter who you were, what you were there, you just happened to be part of the defences. So.
And what was it, the kind of a short defence, then withdraw, stop, withdraw? Was this the kind of thing you were doing?
All you could do, you just to try and steady them down, you know, like make the lines of communication harder for them, you know. Just, as you say, stop, fight, retreat, stop, fight, retreat, all the way down.
And as I said, you didn't get involved in Mersey Matru in any detail?
Big degree. I think they made the minds look like to send us on ahead, if you understand what I mean. We didn't, I can't ever remember being engaged at Mersey. So we must have passed straight through, because I stopped with the cowards. And I've got a standing invitation to have a visit to help with the underlings. And we got Alamein, and we dug in up on the Ruwaisak Ridge.
And was that an immediate thing? As soon as you got there,
you
dug in?
That was where I think that's why they pulled us back.
And was this
all the men that were capable, they pulled them back to make a proper defensive position, you know. And we were up on the Ruwaisak Ridge, and I was there about 6 weeks.
This must have been what, July of 42?
Yeah, July.
Yeah, when everyone had pulled back, yes.
It was more or less a continuation coming from the Gazala line all the way through, right down to Alamein. And, yes,
it did. So you'd see units struggling through all the time as you were there?
There were people struggling through all the time as we were going back, there was others coming back. Others were doing this down the way. You were picking logs in on, and there was always trouble for that. So, mate, stop the fight, you know, stop the fight. And it couldn't go any wrong, you know.
What was your morale like after this? What was quite a heavy defeat?
What was a heavy defeat?
You know, how did your spirits?
Well, I had no question in my mind. I was on top. I just said, not in general. You know, they all got the bloody ball of hat over this lot, didn't they? I mean, bloody generals. you weren't concerned about yourself, honestly. You could only blame the people who were in charge of it, because they'd done the wrong bloody thing. But, you know, even that bloody Truscott of ours, instead of retreating back 500 yards, and putting the bloody guns and that down in the nowhere, where it would have been, well, they might have still got buzzed, but would have made a bloody bigger impact if it had been on the bloody, on the cover, which we should have been, for the case of a matter of 500 yards, where we'd knocked these two bloody tanks out there on your own, and we'd go out down for to take a bit of weight off it, right, you know. No.
So the general feeling was to blame the top hierarchy. But you didn't feel that Rommel and the Germans were too good for you, did you?
No way. Never felt that. I never ever felt that. I honestly didn't. No, I never felt that. I mean, that Truscott, he first came to us within Cyprus, and I've never mentioned this to anybody. And the first thing that man did, he took the proficiency pay off every man in the regiment. We had a proficiency pay, a chance a day, 3 pence a day. And that was him, being proficient soon. And the first thing that man did, he stopped everybody's proficiency pay until he went through a series of tests to prove that they were entitled to proficiency pay. Now, these are men who have been up there, but he's fighting all the way through East Africa, all that way up and down through Syria, all over the place, up and down the bloody desert. And they're all men that could be placed up, such a day. And you can imagine the effect that had on the morale in the regiment. You know, it's disgusting.
So he wasn't a well-liked man?
No, no. Well, I mean, we were the laughingstock of the Bee. We were the laughingstock of the Bee. Regiment in Cyprus. We had many of them spread over it. They would come in and say, oh, here's Tuscott's twin troops. That's what they used to call it, the three T's. Tuscott's twin troops. we had many of them battle over that. With all the different Bee regiments,
And this was still the same regiment number that you had before. You were still in the same.
Yeah, I'm still in the same. General.
What was the number again of your regiment?
Fourth Field. Yeah, Fourth Field. And but I'm saying that I forgot to mention that when I was on the
Okay. But you're now on the Reesyat Ridge, and it's.
Up on the Ridge. And we managed to drive them off in the first instance. And they kept pushing all the time. They were firing all of many time when they hit the 2 pounders, like police fire with many pea shooters, really, Anyway, as I say, they'd been there about 6 weeks or so. And I saw this one in full, and out came this Lucas. Now he'd been made a captain, this Lucas. Took the place of the Corbett when he got killed. And I forgot to mention earlier on, before going into the battle, we were going to form a battle into a 3-battle regiment instead of a 2-battle regiment. So they sent a cadre back to Cairo to form a new regiment, you see.
With this, before which battle? This
before the Cauldron.
Before the Cauldron.
Before the Cauldron, you see. And they'd taken Major Wagstaff, our major, they'd taken him down to form the new battle. And this Lucas, he'd also gone to form the new battery, you see. So, anyway, when it had been promoted out to captain, Bannon pulls up and out jumps this Lucas, being promoted to captain. I know him. So I went over and I said, what is that? What the bloody hell are you doing here for? I thought you were bloody dead. Everybody thought I was dead. God, it had no sign of me. I'm still bloody months more. I said, oh no, I'm still around. I mean, the only one with the gun and grill, he was still with us. So, there I am up on the bloody Reesyat Ridge, you've got to fire this two-pounder. I said, can you get me out of here, sir? Oh, she said, you'll have to go through the proper channel, she said, before we can clear me back, So, about three days later, the word comes through, sent for us, he said, I'm sorry to see you go, and he's got his hat on, I'm sorry to see you go, he said, it would be nice having you with us, he said, you'd be a great help, Well, I said, thank you very much, and I wondered, because the other battery, the form, they just called it the same battery as the one that was in Colenso battery, which had been destroyed completely, they just renamed the Colenso battery, and we still stuck with the two-gun battery,
And this was back with what, 5th Division again, Indian Division?
With the 5th Indian Division,
And it would obviously been reformed, had it?
Yes, it been reformed. Well, quite a number of the batteries and the people who got away, there was only the one actual brigade that got destroyed.
Oh, this was your brigade?
That was our brigade, because we were surrounded on all sides. The only way we could get out was
Before we move right back, you were obviously on the Ruiziat Bridge, a very important time with Rommel trying to make the last breakthrough. Was the fighting quite heavy around you?
Very heavy. I know I trained as an infantry man earlier in my career, but the cannons in that day, I mean, they got pushed back quite a bit. But the counter-attack came back and came in, and they managed to push them back. He just wasn't strong enough to do it. If he'd been strong enough, he would have pushed out through that, would have been hit, and he would have been through Cairo. No way to go stop him, because the Australians were right up on the top, and of course. And then there was the New Zealanders next to them, and then, and then where we were, with the remnants of the Camerons, first Italian Camerons. And that was just a remnant that was left there, you know. It was only remnants, and any old things on, like they were.
You're quite a mixed bunch, were you? Yeah. You'd be quite a mixed bunch.
Yeah, it was quite steady, you know, but it's not like having your own regiment, but you know, tooth and nail, you know, and you can fight tooth and nail and that, you know.
But your two-pounder was able to keep a few of the tanks back. Weren't much use against tanks as a rule.
You couldn't fail it. 800 yards, that was your maximum.
And you had to let them get that close.
You had to let them get that close. Because if you were any above that, you just couldn't cope with it. Yeah, you had to let them get that close. You see.
So you and others, of course, withstood those very initial enemy attacks just as the Alamein line was forming, in effect.
Yes, it was just a formation. We dug in, we did all the digging and everything, you know. And then there'd be like a kind of half dug.
I want to say there was some preparation prior to this.
There was prior preparation, but they never dreamt they would ever get that far. So there was a hell of a lot to do before you could actually say, well, this is it, this is it, like, you know.
Did you have wire and mines in front of you to protect you?
Yes.
They were there.
We didn't have anything in the first place. The tractor was only right on your bloody tail when we got there. You know, it was only a matter of days. You didn't have much time to stay a bit down that way or do anything more than that, you know.
What do you feel enabled you to hold those initial attacks? Were the enemy in themselves tired and exhausted by then, having come so far?
Oh, yeah, I would think so. But having said that, like, it takes a lot to stand up and get the armour. No matter what it is, there's only the armoured elements that were in the front. And once you start to take control on them, They knew that they couldn't. Well, as it became obvious that if they took any more, then they wouldn't have anybody else left to come through with him. But I mean, we shifted the sword over there with the 2 pounder. Mm-hmm. I mean, we let them get up, never mind the bloody 800, we let them come to 400. We just pick our bloody nose up and bang it. We knew for a fact that we'd go through.
Did you have any air support from the RAF?
Not at that time.
There was none of that at all.
Well, there was air support going on, if you understand what I mean, but nothing that you could really shake on that side. There was air support. There was always dogfights and that going on above you and things like that.
So is it reasonable to say that, certainly from your own point of view and others that you were talking to, that it was the generals that you were felt had let you down, walking like in these generals had let you down at that point?
When I look back to the earlier part of the war, when we had Stafford Rock and Jack Campbell and the likes of them people, and others that I mentioned, were all really good generals. Some of them got captured by mischance and things like that. Jack Campbell, he was put in the broken neck or something in the desert. Carl overturned him.
And you'd lost faith in a sense.
You just
had no confidence.
No confidence in them whatsoever. not the latter part of the. I mean, I can be a mother again, but
this was your own feeling, and
that was my feeling at the time. There was no way then. I was no way that I ever could have a little better than me. No, and I don't think anybody in the bloody army did either. So just feel that, given the right bloody gender, like we had in Weber and in the first place, and I mean, having done with all those bloody men all over the bloody place. From Greece, Cyprus, Syria, and Dublin, this one, that way, but how the hell he managed to keep his fingers on any money's pulse, I don't know. It must have been a marvellous journey.
So you rejoined your
reconstituted
battery.
And I'll tell you the thing that happened then, and this was when just after I got back to the regiment, we got a load of ammo in from Canada. We didn't know we'd come from Canada, by the way. We got this load of ammo in, and I just got back to the factory. And when you had a misfire, you had to wait 2 minutes to make sure that the motor didn't go off before you took it out. And every bloody cartridge we put in, and this was just right in the middle of the big battle for Sidney's Egg. This was after I'd left. This was the big battle.
Earlier on.
Well, been earlier on about this battle there, but this, he put a big threat that could break through in it. And we were prepared, and there was no way we would have got through. But this is what happened, and on such things, battles can change. And every bloody gun in the battle, well, there wasn't a gun fired. No fire. Wait 2 minutes. Put another one in. See it again. Nothing. Bloody hell, the battle, the fact that the pushing the bloody.
This is the was this Rommel's attack at Alamein,
which was Rommel's
which was,
big attack at
Alamalfa was the name of the place.
Alamalfa, that's a different battle altogether.
Sidi Rezeg is way up towards Tobruk. Sidi Rezeg is way up towards Tobruk. This was Ruwaisit, not
Ruwaisit. Not Sidi Rezeg. Ruwaisit Ridge. And he put this big building, this was just after I returned, and we fired. We took two minutes on the first one, the second one a minute, and we were just putting in one after the other, and there wasn't a thing fired for that, the whole battle. And they were getting pushed back right, left and centre, with the cameras went out. And then we phoned up to the wireless back to the bring the old bloody ammo up. And I brought all the bloody old ammo up that we had, which this was new ammo that had been brought. And I brought all the old ammo up out of what was still in the wagons and that, didn't I? And I put them on, and of course we started firing. And of course, once we started firing, that was it. Until then, they had their own way. And I mean, talking in minutes, and minutes seemed like 30 hours when things like that happen, you know. And anyway, we got the battery firing again, and instantly, within a matter of minutes, the battle bloody turned, and they shoved them all bloody back again, and back into the room to where they'd come from, you know.
So you'd come out of Ruwaisit originally and gone back to the reconstructed battery, then they brought you back in again. Is this what had happened?
I was back in there, but
they brought you back to the same position, basically.
So we'd had that big deal there, and they came away and they took it, and it had all been made in Canada. And every percussion cap in every cartridge, and it did. The whole bloody battle could have changed on it. Every percussion cap and every cartridge and the whole of that consignment rubbish towns. The gardens were done. You couldn't find the bloody things. They reckon they got the blow and did it, right? They all at least they told us.
It was a sabotage job, was it?
They sabotaged it. Six goes by, and nothing really happened. And that's a hell of a thing to take out of a battle, like, you know, when you spread a touch and go, like, you know.
Was that just your particular consignment of shells, caps?
Probably the rest of the regiment filled up, you know, I mean, the only concern we had at the time. But we had six guns firing bloody blank cartridges, which is no good. Absolutely, the shells were all right, because we tried the shells, and they said to me that the shells were all right. Every cartridge case in that consignment was very good.
Had you had any leave at all up to now after coming out of all this fighting?
No.
So you basically were still in action all this time?
I was in action right from the moment I left Berry. Went up from going up in July. March. March, April, June, somewhere like that. From going up there, I'm back down to Alameen again. And I never had any leave. I never saw anybody. What? You never went anywhere, you never got anywhere, you had nothing. You were looking at somebody come up with a little canteen and give me a piece of chocolate or something.
And I was going to ask you what life was like in the Alamein line. By now it was pretty well established.
Oh, it was an established line. Mm-hmm. I know we had quite a number of cavalry there, actually, because I did the first aid work in the in the battery, I should say. And I always had the satchel with me. And I always carry this with me, you know.
And what did you carry in your satchel? What was in your satchel?
Mainly just morphine tablets or morphine capsules.
You could give injections, could you?
Yeah.
And you'd been trained to and shown how. Dressings, were there dressings in you?
Yeah, the dressings, all the different types of dressings in that area. Interesting to have a satchel about that. You always carry it with you. Well, I always carry it with me. I mean, I remember in that particular time, he was putting his bloody right brother. I don't know what the hell he had about there. Well, he said he was putting his right brother. And his rifle went up and shot him through the back of the arm there. And I dashed over, I had a bloody shot. This was in Alameda. What the bloody hell? I was fighting a bloody shot. This time the bloody knife was on. And I went over from the back of Smith. It was a Smith thing. Very small fella. 5 foot. And I went over and I had a full tourniquet on straight away. Because the wood was just bloody gushing out, you know. And I found it in the mud. And I got on my way back to the first aid post. I don't know what happened to him after that. Probably be all right. He'd be knackered after a few years of that.
Do you get used to the wounds, the horrific wounds of action and battles in that?
Yeah. You never get used to them. You never actually get used to them. You just bear them, you know, because somebody's got to do it, you know. You can't do it. Another lad there, he got a piece of shrapnel through his hand there, took the right thing through there. And I bandaged him up like that. And he went back. And when he got back to the bed, he said, "We're going to leave that. Whoever did it was going to be killed." He said, "Because we don't need to take that. We'll leave it." At least I can use the hand. It's still using the hand. But the fingers are still different.